David Hawkins is editor of Congressional Quarterly's Roll Call, author of the Hawkins Here blog and column, covered Congress in various positions at CQ since 1995, and frankly knows more about Congress than anybody I know. Okay, David, let's begin with this. Senator Elizabeth Warren has been a Clinton surrogate, very effective out there. She's a darling of the left. We know that. There's going to be a big problem with picking up the Bernieites to vote for Hillary. We know that also. So how about Warren for vice president?
I think that's obviously something that we know that she, Hillary Clinton, is considering herself. It would make obvious sense for the reasons you just said. She would appeal to the Bernie supporters, probably like no other person besides Bernie himself on the ticket. But there are some significant downsides, not the least of which is that if she became vice president, it would be Governor Charlie Baker, a Republican, who would fill that seat. Secondarily, there is some concern that the Democrats have seen some polling that one woman on the ticket, fine, two women might be a bridge too far for some voters. This is just me talking here. I am not sure from having covered and paid attention to Mrs. Clinton, really for my entire professional life, practically, I would wonder whether she is inclined to share this historic moment with somebody else, that she, you know, she spent her, you know, in a long, long time, a couple of decades now, trying to reach this point, the first major party nominee of a political party who's a woman. Does she really want to share that historic thing, that historic moment, with another female? That's just me asking that rhetorically.
Okay, well then let's move on then. Who else you got?
So I think the one that I've been touting for months now seems to be emerging as the consensus conventional wisdom choice, and that is Tim Kaine, Senator from Virginia. He was one of the three finalists for Barack Obama 8 years ago. It came down to Biden, Tim Kaine, and a senator from Indiana named Evan Bayh. Obviously, we know how that turned out. Tim Kaine is a former governor. He's a senator. He's from a swing state. He is fluent in Spanish. He was a missionary in Central America as a young college, right after graduating from college. He is a safe choice. He is, by his own admission, the boring choice. He joked on the talk shows the other day that boring is the fastest demographic group in the country right now.
Sounds like Keeler. And, of course, what happens with his replacement?
Well, so Terry McAuliffe is a Democrat and is the governor of Virginia. Conspiracy theory. Terry McAuliffe, those who followed politics for a while may remember that name.
Sure.
He was the Clinton's main consigliere and fundraiser for many, many years. He is a very ambitious guy. Virginia is unique in the United States in that the governor cannot be elected to a second term. So governors of Virginia are lame ducks as soon as they take office. Terry McAuliffe's own term ends in 2017. A lot of speculation that Terry McAuliffe would appoint himself to the Senate if Tim Kaine moved from the Senate to the vice president's office. Terry McAuliffe is urging us to tamp down on that speculation.
There's some precedence on that one, David. I remember out in California 1,000 years ago when I was a kid, there was a switch between the senator and the governor, which is interesting. It could be done. There would be some resentment, wouldn't there?
It almost never works, to be honest. I haven't thought about this in a while, but generally, I think I did look at this once, and almost never has a governor who appointed himself to the Senate been able to win re-election in his or her own right. It's even been problematic for governors who've appointed their own family members. Governor Murkowski appointed his own daughter to the Senate in Alaska, and she had a heck of a time winning re-election in her own right. So, yeah, it's tough to do.
Talk to me about the impact of the Trump candidacy on who we are going to see in the United States Congress and Senate. Right now, these polls are pretty close. So you would think, if it does turn out to be a close election, will Trump have either positive or negative coattails?
There are many Republicans who think he's going to have negative coattails, reverse coattails, in some seats. That having been said, as we've probably talked about on this program before, and you've probably talked about with a lot of people smarter than I am, there are the so-called playing field of congressional districts that are able to be won by both parties is very small. So there are 435 congressional districts around the country. really no more than about 10% of them have demographics that would allow both parties to win. The other 90% are drawn to virtually guarantee the election of either a Democrat or a Republican. And in those 43, at the moment, CQ Roll Call only views about 27 of them as potentially competitive. So not enough of a that 27 would not be enough for the Democrats to win back the House. If they won all of those, which they're not going to, it would take at this point 30 seats to win back the House. So at the moment, it's if he does have reverse coattails, they won't be very big or long.
So you think that Congressman Paul Tonko, who was on this very show not that long ago, who predicted that the Democrats could take back the House, is just wrong?
I think at this point, I like Mr. Tonko. He's a very smart guy. He's been a good source of mine. I think that is highly wishful thinking, in part because it's getting a little late in the game to find credible candidates to run in some of these seats. The Democrats did not start early finding viable candidates to run in some of these potentially competitive places, and they are left with people who are underfunded and who have odd resumes and who are kind of odd ducks. And unless there is an enormous wave, which could develop, I mean, waves have developed, the so-called wave elections have developed at the very end. That's kind of what happened in 2010, where you ended up with, you know, the pizza parlor owner winning a seat in Illinois and so forth. That could potentially happen. I don't think the stage is set for it yet.
You said earlier on one of our shows that you thought that there was a 10% chance that Trump wouldn't be the candidate. What do you got in mind?
Well, I think that there is a concerted effort. We know that there is a concerted effort by several hundred of the delegates to the Republican convention to change the rules or alter the precedents so that they don't have to, so that the they can either declare a conscience clause. Let's simplify it this way. They want the rules for the convention to allow delegates, even those delegates who have been chosen with a legal commitment to back Trump, to declare that as a matter of conscience, they won't support Trump and that they should be able to vote for whomever they want. So that's a concerted effort. It would, in order for that to happen, a majority of the delegates would have to do that, would have to vote for that to happen. That's a long shot. Beyond that, one of the oldest adages in politics is you can't beat somebody with nobody. And this group of dissenting rump delegates that I'm talking about is not unified behind one alternative candidate. Some of the people who are trying to derail the Trump juggernaut are doing it for ideological reasons. They don't think he's conservative enough. They worry about him on gun control. They worry about him on gay rights. They worry about him on taxes. They worry about him on a whole host of things. And others from the sort of more liberal end of the party, the sort of old New England liberal group, a very small of whom are left, just think he's temperamentally unsuited to be president and want to stop him on those grounds. So they're not unified behind who a replacement should be.
It's great to talk to David Hawkins, the man who knows more about Congress than anybody I know. He's editor of Congressional Quarterly's Roll Call, author of the Hawkins Here blog and column, has covered Congress in various positions at CQ since 1995.